Welcome to D-Backs Podcast.
The future.
Technology and stuff.
This is the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Sports, 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 sports.
From the field to the front office, the ballpark to the broadcast booth, it's time to talk D-Backs baseball.
Just think about baseball.
Here are Greg Schulte and a high drive to left. Back she goes. And Steve Berthew.
Look at Chris Owens. Go get it.
Play ball.
From Chase Field in downtown Phoenix, Arizona, this is D-Backs Podcast, the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and welcome back to episode 23.
Where we been?
Well, you know, Gub, the podcast, originally designed as a forum for our D-backs discussions during the offseason, you know, something to keep us going in the wintertime here, and it was so much fun, it carried over into the season, and now, here we are finally back after, well, what we'll call a midsummer hiatus, all the traveling we've done the last few months. It's been kind of difficult to coordinate with everybody's game day responsibilities, so after July and August off, we are back in September, episode 23.
After a day off at home, which I think really refreshed us and got us ready to roll here. You ready, Leo?
Just that little bit we needed.
A day off at home. You can't even put a price tag on the value of that.
Well,
it's amazing.
Because we haven't had one in about 3 months.
Man, we have traveled.
Except for the All-Star break.
We had like 13 home games in 8 weeks. Yeah. Crazy. So anyway, as the season, which has been very entertaining and interesting and competitive all year, starts to really wind down, we are back on D-Backs Podcast. I'm Steve Berthume. We've got a show this week that looks both back at what we've seen the last few months and ahead to what we may see in the offseason, and how what we're seeing now may impact what we see this winter. And with that, we'll discuss a lot with Diamondbacks Senior VP of Baseball Operations, Dejon Watson. That's coming up shortly. A tremendous discussion with Dejon. I thought really comprehensive in covering all aspects of both the major league level and the minor league level. It's going to be a great listen, so we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, if the fans want to know about the Diamondbacks minor leaguers, what the organization looks like right now on the big league level, stay tuned because you're going
to
enjoy it.
And Dejon is so good to talk to because he looks at everything, as he should, given his title, through the eyes of the scout. And, you know, we see things and we watch the games a lot like fans. He watches at bats and pitchers and games completely differently. So it's always interesting, I find, to look at the game through his filter because it's very, very different. Also, we'll take a look back at the trade deadline moves that have altered the division and the wild card races, which team made the moves that made the difference as we get to October. Some worked out really, really well, others not so much. We'll talk about that in Around the League. That's coming up in this episode. Finally, back home here at Chase Field, seems like we played most of the second half on the road. A series against the Dodgers about to begin today. They are down in the field right now, actually, as we tape this on a Friday afternoon, working out.
It's like they're rehabbing a lot of guys.
They got a lot of banged up guys. I think I see Howie Kendrick down there.
Yeah, it is.
Trying to come back from his hamstring injury.
He's just been had somebody on the mound, too.
A month, yeah. I mean, they have got their problems, but as usual, they find a way to plug guys in, and they continue to lead the division. Padres in town next, and then the final road trip coming up, guys. The one last tour through the division. We go
San Francisco. Same way we're playing them here, San Francisco, L.A., San Diego.
That's right. And then that's it. We're back home for the Astros, and we're done.
Well, Colorado, too.
Oh, thank. Good call.
Yeah. He might not have shown up for that, Leo.
We might have gone to black there. If you guys hadn't mentioned that.
Yes, darn it, Greg. Why'd you have to?
I know. I'm sorry. Darn.
He almost got away with it. And with that, let's introduce our cavalcade of stars on D-Backs Podcast as the baseball regular season winds down just as the NFLs begin. And that noble servant of the Sons of New England, Tom Brady, justifiably vindicated from the juridical malfeasance and the misguided jurisprudence of Roger Goodell, got the defending Super Bowl champs a win in the opener in Foxborough. Disregard Roger Goodell. Tommy Brady is a winner. 4 touchdowns. We introduce our Tom Brady. He is the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, the Earl of Grantham. Say hello to the Governor, Greg Schulte.
Sweetly.
You went Three Stooges on us.
I went curly. Sweetly.
Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard. Also on the program. I always love that dramatic pause because I know you're waiting to see what I've come up with.
It's the best part. It's my favorite part of the entire program.
I think every time. It's been such a long layoff. I didn't want to be too.
You didn't want to beat you up.
Thank you. There's always someone behind the scenes that makes sure that the footballs are properly inflated as the NFL's investigation, we'll use those little finger quotes, discovered. The man who keeps D-backs podcast at exactly the right level of PSI. We introduce the Kingslayer. It's our producer, our engineer, our man about town, the mother of dragons, Leo, Bad News Gil Martin.
So I'm the ball handler?
If you say so.
That's about the PG way to put it.
If you say so.
You get a little Marvin Barnes intro
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I got a Bad News. And
you like the Marvin Barnes.
That was my favorite one.
Yeah, that worked out when you were in St. Louis talking about the old St. Louis spirits. Yeah. So here we are, Gub. Not quite halfway through September. We're winding down. We got one big homestand here, one more big road trip, and then we're pretty much done. I think it's fair to say that there's a level of fatigue that has set in here. Maybe late August, the team has not played especially well the last 17, 18 games. There was the moment where we came back from Cincinnati, having swept the Reds, one game over 500, five back in the division, and now it's 12, 13 games back. So things went south quickly there over the last 2 weeks. It seems like everybody kind of ran out of gas there for a bit.
And the numbers don't lie. You were five back. The Diamondbacks were five back after Cincinnati, proceeded to go 4-12 over the next 16 games and lost 9.5 games in the standings because the Dodgers went 13-2. So, you know, there was some talk about the Diamondbacks at that time. Hey, look at the Diamondbacks. They're charging, which they were, but they hit that really rough homestand. St. Louis came in, swept them four.
Yeah.
They lost two out of three. They beat the ace of the A's, and they lose to the other two guys. Then they went on another road trip, split the four in Colorado, which is, you know, you'll take that. I mean, Colorado's a tough place to win baseball games. They split the four ball games there. They won that doubleheader. And then it didn't go so well on their next stop.
Cubs, it's interesting because you circle. You want to compete with the best in the league. And the best in the league right now, certainly on the list, Cardinals and Cubs, they got swept by both teams. That for me is a big barometer. But as you said, people noticed when we came back from Cincinnati, I think it was 62-61 at that
game point. Game over 500.
And everyone said, wow, these guys are really playing well. They're doing some nice things over there in Arizona. And I think that's what you take away from the season as a whole. You know, there were a lot of doubters here about everything. There was the whole grit narrative, and then you bring in Tony La Russa and the whole new front office and Dave Stewart, and you know people kind of chirped about things that were said and about the way that this organization is going to run. But then things worked, and they worked really well for a long time. And so I think that box has been checked on the nationwide attention span of the fans, of the media people in the industry. It's clear that this organization is headed in a really, really positive direction.
And if there's one thing that this ball club proved this year and proved going forward because of its youth, and again, they're the youngest team in baseball, is their offense and their defense. They've got hitters. At one time, the top four in the order, Enders dropped back a little bit. He's still in the 290s. We had Enciarte, Pollock, Goldschmidt, and Peralta all up over 300. Three of them still are.
Yeah.
Enders still got a chance to get there. We've seen the emergence of Jake Lamb over the last month and a half, develop into, I think, the type hitter they look at him being going forward. The addition of the Wellington Castillo, you know, in June. In this case, it's 16 home runs in just a few months for the Diamondbacks. And even Salty Lamacchia has hit well. So the offense is there. You know, they got some good pieces in the minor leagues. Where it all is going to have to start with again now is into the pitching. And Patrick Corbin coming back and getting 3 months in, I think, is huge. Three and a half. We've seen the development of Ruby De La Rosa going through a whole season now. So, you know, there are a lot of pluses that we've seen here. I think the biggest thing for me, Bert, I look at 62-61. That takes through 123 ball games.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, I think we knew after about 75, 80 ball games, the Diamondbacks were probably going to finish at the basement or close to the basement that season. So that's a differential of about 40, 45 ball games where this ball club has really picked it up. And Chip Hale, the manager, and his coaching staff won't let this ball club, you know, take a break here going down the stretch. So they want them to finish strong.
They run every ball out. They hustle.
27th out.
As Chip pointed out, they hustle when it's hard to hustle, when things aren't going well, when the wins and losses, as he put it, are trending in the wrong direction, as they have the last couple of weeks. The defense has been sensational. We saw that. We've seen that really the last couple of years, but it's continued to improve. With this offense, you don't need much more. The way they hit the ball and the way they defend, you don't need much more here. You need another couple of pitchers.
Two in the rotation at least.
I agree. And I think you need to shore up that bullpen.
I think you need a closer. And I'm not taking that away from Ziegler, but we know how Ziegler is when he's earlier in the ballgame.
I think you're two starting pitchers and a closer away from contending for a postseason spot, and I don't think there's any doubt about that. I agree with you. Brad's done a phenomenal job in the closing role. There's no question about that. But we all know he's a real weapon. Seventh inning, first and second, one out. He's a deadly weapon. That's the guy you want to see coming in, and you want to have him there for that spot.
And you brought up the other night, there was a ball game where the Diamondbacks need three or four pitchers to get two outs, whereas Ziegler can come in possibly and get that done with one pitch or the one pitcher doing it instead.
We saw that in the last series. They had to go to three different pitchers in the one inning, and I said that's the difference with Brad Ziegler as the closer. He's that one guy. Instead, you needed three, and then you hand it off to the closer, whoever that may be down the road in the ninth inning. But I agree with you. There's going to be a lot of free agent pitchers out there. I think they buy one and they trade for one. That's just my opinion, based on
because I think they can do it that way.
I agree.
And they don't need to go out and spend, you know, all these millions of dollars on a top line guy. Maybe they trade for a guy like that, you know, somebody who might be available, and then they go out and sign maybe a two or a three guy if they can possibly do it. I don't think they're going to get a Price or a Cueto or some of the other top line pitchers.
Good, because those guys aren't going to be worth the money.
Well, that's another thing to take into consideration. So maybe you go out and you trade for a guy who's still on the upswing, maybe young in his career, but he's close to being a one. He's maybe a two or a three right now. And then you have Corbin back. You can throw Ruby into the mix. You go out and maybe sign a free agent with another pick, and it could be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's no doubt about that, because I know this organization. At the top, they're going to get something done.
It's going to be a very compelling offseason. There's no doubt about that. I really believe that when you look at the pitching, what kills you and what has killed them time and time again this year, not that it's happened a lot, but every time it does, you go, wow, that's really a problem, is when the starting pitcher goes two innings or three and a third.
And that's happened too
or
much.
Or four and two-third. That's happened far too – it's going to happen to everybody.
Yeah.
But it's happened far too frequently to this team this year. Those are the ones that kill you. So when you look at the offseason, who can we get, who can we sign? Look, if you want to go spend $250 million on David Price, God bless, that's terrific. You don't need to do that. What you need to find are – two starting pitchers, and I think we agreed on the number two, that will give you a chance to win every fifth day. You don't have to go get the $200 million guy. What you need is the guy that's going to go six or seven innings every fifth day that'll carry the ball for 30 starts, 200 innings, and keep the other team to two or three runs and keep you in the ballgame. When you don't get that, then everything breaks down. Then the bullpen gets worn out, and then it snowballs on you. Mm-hmm. So if you can avoid those three and a third inning starts by your starters, you're going to be a much improved team. So to do that, just go get, look at a Samardzija, that type of guy, because he's not going to cost you what the other guys are going to cost you. Look at what the Cubs did with Jake Arrieta. No, nobody wanted Jake Arrieta. He was a guy that was in Baltimore and had some problems.
How about that trade?
I mean, that trade, go find Jake Arrieta. Then they had Hamill. They lost him. They brought him back, Jason Hamill. Guys like that make a big difference.
The only thing I remember about the Arrieta deal, I know Steve Clevenger, a catcher, was part of that deal. So that tells you right there what the Cubs got, in that kind of a trade.
And look at the Cubs now. I mean, they're going to the postseason. They might host the game. Who knows if they catch Pittsburgh. But they gave John Lester $155 million. He can't throw to the bases, and he can't hit. Not that that really matters. And he's been fine. He's been fine. But has he been worth $155 million? Not even close.
Games,
And he's not their best pitcher, by the way. So when they do play that wild card, must-win, one-and-done game, Lester's not going to be on the mound.
It's 100% certain it's going to be Arrieta.
Right. So that just supports the point that we're making here. You don't need to go write the giant check and pay too much money for Johnny Cueto or David Price, who's probably going to go to the Cubs, by the way, and reunite with Joe Maddon. Just go get a good quality major league starting pitcher. That's all you need. You need two of them.
And if you get those two to add along with Corbin and Ruby, who's getting his first full season, then you got a ton of kids that you could filter into that five slot.
Yeah.
Great competition.
And we'll talk to Dijon about this. Yeah. I find it hard to believe that Aaron Blair won't be in the rotation for most of next season. Maybe opening day, maybe shortly after that, I don't know. But
look at the mix.
He's going to end up making at least 20, 25 starts next year.
But, I mean, if you acquire one in a trade and sign one, pitcher, you've got Corbin coming back. now healthy.
Hellickson.
You've got Hellickson. You've got Ruby. And then in the mix, you've got guys like Robbie Ray, Chase Anderson, Zach Godley, Aaron Blair.
Chassin.
That's five guys right there battling for maybe one spot, maybe two. You know, maybe even three. You don't know. But they need to go out and acquire a pitcher in a trade. They need to go out and, I think, possibly sign a pitcher. Now, whether or not they do that, maybe they make two trades. I don't know. But I think I would like to see a couple more come into the rotation.
I agree. But I think they have a lot of options now,
they do,
as you just pointed out, and then you supplement that in the offseason. I think where the most construction is needed for me is the bullpen. I think they – I don't want to say it's going to be a complete rebuild because you've got some very good parts down there, but I think they really have to change what's going on in that bullpen. They really need to shore that up for me.
Right now, you know, the left-hander, Chapin's had an outstanding year.
Tremendous.
He got a little tired. They shut him down briefly. I think he and Ziegler are the two givens right now. Probably Hudson if he's not, you know, given a chance to win a rotation spot.
Right.
And then you kind of go from there. You know, Delgado's had a nice year. But he's somebody you want to use probably more in the sixth inning, maybe a seventh inning on occasion here and there. So they need some pieces in the bullpen, there's no doubt. I think a bullpen's a little easier to fix maybe than going out and getting starters, in my eyes, if you can get the right guy to close.
They're more attainable in trades.
Yeah.
Good bullpen pieces are easier to get.
They're not going to cost you as much either.
Yeah. I mean, Andrew Miller got all that money from the Yankees last year. That was a very rare instance.
Organizations have torn a bullpen completely apart, rebuild it the next year, and come back and had a good bullpen.
Yes,
it can be done.
And I think they need to do that. I'm a big fan of Daniel Hudson late in the ballgame of the bullpen myself, coming in and throwing 100 as he's been doing, consistent 97, 98, 100. And Huddy, for me, first of all, we don't have enough guys back there that can do that. Everybody has, it seems, five guys that throw 98. Diamondback could use a few more of them.
Oh, sure.
Huddy's one. And the other thing for me with Huddy is we've watched him time and time again all year long throw really big pitches in really difficult spots and get the out. And how many times have you seen Huddy finally get that last out to end the inning and kind of do that fist pump that he does when he gets the big out, walks off the mound there? He's done that a lot this year. And there's something to be said for the guy that can do that, because not everybody can. So for me, I really like Huddy in the bullpen myself.
I think the length now maybe has got caught up to him a little bit, having sat out a little bit. So I think we're seeing him throw more pitches than we had earlier in the season. Be quiet down there.
They're raking the field down there.
But you know, he's had if you stop and you look at his numbers, he now, as we record this, he's appeared in 54 ball games. And you look at staff, only Ziegler and Chapin have appeared in more. So, you know, it's pretty good coming back after missing a couple of years of Tommy John.
What do you want to do in the infield?
Well, that's a good question. Obviously, the first baseman's set in stone. Then you try and figure out who's your second baseman, who is your shortstop, and is Jake Lamb your third baseman? I think Lamb's your third baseman. I think first and third are pretty well set. So I think and the reason really with Jake, I think we've seen enough progress. He's a left-handed bat who the power is going to get better and better. And he doesn't have to hit a ton of home runs. If he can hit, you know, 12, 15, or maybe even a few more, but the doubles, I think he can line into the gaps. Mm-hmm. The batting average, I think, is going to be halfway decent. He's gotten better there. So it becomes what you're going to do up the middle. Is Ahmed the answer? Is Owens the answer at shortstop? Is Drury going to be the second baseman? Is it Owens? What are you going to do? They've got some things to figure out up the middle.
And there's Reinheimer, who they like a lot, who came from Seattle
Gosselin
in the Mark Trumbo deal and played shortstop at AA Mobile. Mm-hmm. You've got Phil Gosselin, who has really looked good here. Tony La Russa said last week, the outfield is set. The outfield is set. Now it's a matter of plugging in the right three infielders to go along with Goldie. That was what Tony La Russa said last week to the media. And I think that's pretty clear. Phil Gosselin seems like a professional major league hitter who gives you quality at bat almost every time. Is he best served as your second baseman? Is he best served as your utility infielder who can play a couple of different spots and come off the bench?
Super utility guy, because he knows to play the outfield and give you a little help there, too.
It seems like the best fit for the team might be for Gosselin in that role. We'll see. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he has enough range to play second base defensively. Haven't really seen him turn a double play there.
He really had to make too many hard plays yet.
He's had a lot of balls hit right at him. We'll ask Deshaun Watson about that in just a moment. Shortstop for me, that's a tough one, man. I don't know what the answer is there.
Yeah, Ahmed got up to such a slow start. And then he got his batting average up to around 250, and it's plummeted again. And, you know, we're seeing a few more swings and misses. I don't know if that's just the full season finally catching up to him or what, but he's rock solid. The one thing about all of these kids we're talking about, they're rock solid defensively.
No question.
So, you know, if it's Ahmed at short, I think Chris Owings has played great at shortstop when they moved him back there. And he's been a gold glove type second baseman for me.
His defense has been outstanding, CO.
And I think the shoulder's good now.
It seems like it certainly seems like it's a lot better.
So do you give him a do-over maybe for this season and think, well, you know, this guy might be what we saw in April of 2013 after all when he was Rookie of the Month?
I think it's easy to forget that because of the – first they thought the shoulder was a bone bruise. Yeah. Then they found the torn labrum. So he couldn't actually – he hurt himself.
And he was playing.
Hurt himself in June, didn't have the surgery until October. Yeah. So think about that. Then – it's easy to forget this. He couldn't do any hitting all winter long. Nothing.
Right.
Just had to sit there. So imagine a young guy at his age trying to find your way
as
a major league player.
He's still only
23. Yeah, who can't do any hitting at all almost till the end of spring training. All winter long, nothing. Then he got spring training. He's not really allowed to do much at all until finally middle of March or so he could swing a bat. That's a lot to overcome. And
then, now you're late in the season. He's really raking.
Yeah. So you haven't hit all winter. You have barely hit all spring. Suddenly you're in there against major league pitching, and we're wondering, well, why isn't he hitting? So, for me, you throw it out. I think that's fair. Nick Ahmed was hitting .130 the first week of May.
.132.
But they kept him out there because the defense was so good, and they hung to. I think to the organization's credit, they hung in there with Nick and gave him a chance. So then, middle of May, he started a stretch of exactly 50 games. It started when he was at 132. He had a 50-game stretch where he hit over 300, hit a bunch of home runs, 6, 7, 8 home
clutch
runs.
Clutch hits, too.
Yeah. And then he got to 249, and then when he got to 249, he went right back down. So if it's a chart, there's a big jump in the middle, and then it kind of flatlines. So is Nick Ahmed the guy that hit 300 for that 50-game stretch, or is he the guy we've seen the last 2 months?
I think if you could find a happy medium in between, you'd be more than excited
about that. But that's the thing. The swings have been so drastic.
And they say he's been a streaky hitter throughout his professional career.
Yeah. So there's a lot a lot to be figured out.
But there's
there.
Not a lot. Catching now is short up. You know, with the acquisition of Wellington Castillo, Jared Saltalamacchia's come in. Tuffy next spring will be well. You've got Oscar Hernandez who's going to play next year in the minor leagues. He's got his development to go through. But, you know, catching right now is in good hands. As you said, the outfield is set. So there are not a lot of questions with position players and offense and defense with this ball club.
There are
some questions, but, I mean, they're not, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 of them.
You know the guy for me that deserves a ton of credit this year is Salty.
Yeah.
I mean, here's a guy who looked like his career might be over. Miami gave him all that money, then let him go. And he was sort of – and they picked him up because they needed a body, basically. A handful of games at Reno. Comes up here. Didn't do a whole lot when he first got here. But, boy, has he been – he's been terrific
he's been
off the bench.
Up. Yep.
He hits homers from the right side and the left side. Just this week he hit a homer from the right-hand box one night, then the left-hand box the next night. He's been a terrific bat as a pinch hitter.
7 for 21, that's .333. You'll take that as a pinch hitter any day.
And he's really been really contributed. Now, if you're going to tell me he's going to be the backup catcher just like he is now all next year, great. Where do I sign? He's been great. Terrific. Just what you would want.
Yeah.
So I agree the catching position has really been solidified, and Castillo's had the best year of his career. So let's talk about all these things and more with our first guest, and this is Leo. You did a great job. This booking a big time guest here for the show.
Well, I had 2 months to to book him. So
that's true.
I've been working on it.
So let's welcome in now Deshaun Watson.
Hello.
All right, friends, it is time.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome one of the magnificent figures?
He's so good.
My guest.
It's always a pleasure when our guest drops by.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want to have them answered immediately.
Joining us now on D-Backs Podcast, Episode 23, Diamondbacks Senior Vice President of Baseball Operations, Deshaun Watson, is with us. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
What does this September evaluation period mean for the front office and for the players on the field?
I think for us it's an opportunity to really see these young players in a different arena. Obviously, with the deck, the ballpark, the lifestyle. And you can kind of sit back and watch them, you know, as a team travels. You see who they're interacting with, how they're getting along with their teammates. On the field itself, you see how they're managing the game, the pace of the game, their focus. Again, it's really hard because we're playing games that we're trying to win, every single one of them.
Sure.
And these kids are getting an opportunity to jump in there, like Brito a couple of nights ago had a chance to get out there and start. I'm sure his heart was going 1,000 miles a minute, but his pace, if you looked at his face and how calm he was, he kept it together pretty good for a rookie. And you look at the explosion and the quickness that he plays with. As a manager, I think as a general manager, as a CBO, myself, we're sitting here just trying to look at how does that play for us going into 16, going into 17. And if he is someone that continues to evolve and grow as a player, you look at his skill set, and you're always, for me, you're looking at what's happening in the future. So it's an opportunity for us to continue to assess where we are. We sit back and, you know, we change our rosters and look at what the club would look like if he had, you know, player X in this position or player Y here. You know, then going back and, you know, the big league game is going on, the playoff games are going on, and we're watching those kids as well. We're like, man, what would happen if this guy were, you know, at some point gets up here? So we're constantly assessing and evaluating where we are, what we're seeing, and the feedback we're getting from the coaching staff on how these guys are performing and actually blending in with the group.
It's interesting to hear you talk about your filter, because we and the fans watch the surface. Oh, he got a hit. He didn't get a hit. He made a nice play. He didn't make the play. But you're really looking at all kinds of different things, aren't you?
Well, for me, it's the layer underneath that really separates these guys. I mean, you talk about Goldie. If you had seen him in the California League when he was about, you know, maybe 25, maybe 30 pounds heavier than he is today, and the mindset, and you see him now and the kind of player he is and how he goes about his work, these guys they're constantly evolving and growing and changing, and someone may say something that they'll take to heart and they'll be able to apply it. So you're constantly looking for those little pieces that are going to separate and make a good makeup guy for your ball club or a good piece to add in. Because, again, when you're building this team out to be competitive, to compete for, you know, more than 162 games, you know, which guy's going to fit in a platoon role for you? Who's going to be the best fit? Who can come up here off your bench and give you a quality at bat if you have to, you know, if they're in AAA, but man, we really need a right-handed bat or we need a left-handed bat. Whose swing is low maintenance enough that they can come up here, sit for 7 days, come off the bench and face a closer and give you a quality at bat? So, again, we're looking for, you know, these guys, their mindsets, their makeups, and their work habits and how they go about it.
Did you struggle at all? I mean, you've got the youngest club in baseball. That's mm-hmm. that's come out. Did you struggle at all with the call-ups, being that a lot of these guys you want to see in September that are playing already up here, and you want to see them finish strong? Mm-hmm. So with the glut of the new players right now, was that a struggle? Should we call him up or shouldn't we? Do we want to continue to see this guy? Can we filter this guy in somewhere?
You know, I think, you know, Stu and I, we had talked, goodness, I'm going to say almost a month prior to getting to this point of where we may go with the call-ups. And the teams are still in contention in the minor leagues, and the guys were having good years. The guys were kind of getting themselves back on the map. I think the biggest thing for I think the decision-making or decisions to call up which guys we called up, some were of need base, based on innings or the bullpen, performance as well. And so we really tried to you know, I guess, weigh both sides of this thing to make sure we did what was best not only for the kid but also for the big club, as well as the, you know, their overall potential and growth as a player.
One of the guys that intrigues us, I know, and Bert and I have talked about this, is Drury. We've seen him play second. We've seen him play third. He's a big kid, but, I mean, he just handles him so well at a young age right now.
He's been fun to watch this year for myself because, you know, being on the other side prior to coming to the Diamondbacks, I watched him in the Midwest League as a player. You saw signs of power and run production. And then having the opportunity to come over here and watch him, you know, in Double-A in the first half, and he was really making some adjustments. He wasn't driving the ball like he has done in the past. And it was kind of getting into him and affecting him personally, not really as a player, but his at-bats and his approach throughout the course of the season. And so he made some minor adjustments. Him and Cam worked really hard to get him back in the right center field gap, and then he got promoted to Triple-A. And again, it's a higher elevation, a little faster play. And bam, here it comes. He's driving these baseballs. They're not getting over the fence, but he's hitting some hard doubles off the wall. And so you see the adjustments that he's making. I was fortunate enough to even see him play shortstop in AAA for a few innings, which really surprised me because I didn't know he had that type of body control. I made some really good plays going to his right at second base. So you're like, okay, man, hey, this guy could do some of the things we've been talking about internally. And so to get him, you know, after seeing the spring training that he had, to have him come up here at the end of the year and match up against some of these other September call-ups and even clubs that are in contention, let's see how he manages those at-bats and get a chance to see what he brings to the table for us going into 16 and 17.
Well, he was really impressive in spring training. He might have been the Diamondbacks' best hitter in spring training.
He had a phenomenal spring.
You know, in watching him play the Fall League and in the spring and talking to him a little bit since he's been here and talking to people that have been at Mobile all year, Brandon Drury, one of the most impressive things that everybody mentions and that we notice is the way that he approaches his profession. He's very serious, it seems, about his profession. Have you found that to be the case?
100%, and to the point to where I'm almost I want him to back up a little bit and get another hobby, or not another hobby, but just you have to breathe because this game is such, you know, it's an immense amount of failure, and it'll wear on you, and it'll wear you down mentally, and you know when things aren't functioning for you at this level like they do in the minor leagues, because again the competition isn't as steep as it is here, there's some of those downtimes may be a little more, you know, they could be a little lengthier. So you want him to be able to separate the two and get back to his norm and be able to, you know, kind of turn it off then turn it back on as time to go to work. So you're just really trying to help him find his way, and I'm hoping the relationships he's building in the locker room, there's someone there is going to give him some tips. He's a really good friend with Tulo, and I know they spend the winters working out together, so I'm hoping he's taking some advice from him on how to manage.
That worked out pretty well for Nolan Arenado. Yeah,
that's an understatement, yeah.
He's a good test case, as it were. Is he a second baseman or is he a third baseman? He's even played some shortstop in Rito. It's silly to ask you that question now.
Right.
But what's that process like in the dialogue and the discussion in the front office when you've got a player like that who could fit very well, it seems, at more than one position?
Well, you know, again, we bounce it around and off of each other. And again, you have to look at club and club need. And so coming out of spring training, did we think Yasmani was going to be our third baseman? Then all of a sudden, you know, Lamb gets nicked up, and now you have a new third baseman out there. Well, Drew was right there and could have probably stepped in at that point.
Sure.
But do you want to slow down his progression offensively and mentally? There were just more things that he needed and you know, throughout that minor league season to get him prepared to come here and compete. And so we take another guy who hadn't played in over a year, stuck him at third base, and he grinded out some things for us. And, again, we got to learn something about the player there. Drew went to Double A and did his thing and got himself started. So these are, you know, kind of conversations you have, you know, within the room on who's the best fit for us right now and who's going to be the best fit for us long term. I think Drew's skill set, I mean, he can play, I think he'd play definitely a solid average to above average third base. And I see him being a solid average second baseman with an upside of being, you know, I won't say a gold glover, but his range, it will surprise you what the balls that he'll get to. And the more he's over there, I think he'll get him a little more acclimated to how to handle the pivot and the different tricks of the trade at second base, but he's definitely more than serviceable at second base, but I think his skills at third are really elite.
And then the obvious question that the fan would have here is, okay, well, where does that leave Jake Lamb, and do you then move him to second, Brandon Drury, where he, even though he might be better at third, it really is complicated, isn't it?
It is when you start building this thing out, but yeah. I mean, things change throughout the course of a season, throughout the course of a winter. A lot of conversations happen between now and then, And again, we're trying to gain as much ground as we can as far as adding depth into this organization to help us be stronger. It doesn't matter if you lose one. You hopefully have enough strength and enough depth that these guys are able to step up and continue to produce and compete at a high level. So the positive is that we do have two really good guys who can stand at third base and two really good guys that can stand at second base. And which one's going to be the best to help us get over the hump? And when we get to the point to where we're saying that from, you know, again, from Kane County all the way up, where guys are fighting for that opportunity to either be promoted or push the guy that's in front of them, then we'll be in a really good position of strength.
One of the areas you might have been looking at coming into this offseason was maybe to upgrade catching.
Mm-hmm.
You had Oscar as a Rule 5. He started the year on the DL. Then the injury to Tuffy. And now all of a sudden the acquisitions of a couple of veteran guys in Wellington and Salty. I mean, that's a big help to this ball club. I mean, instead of having to go out and look for maybe some catching help now, you can go out in other areas, which you were probably going to do anyway. But, you know, now that catching area looks pretty solid.
I mean, picking up Wellington and as well as Salty, man, those guys have been great for us. I think they've been a great teacher to the young man, Mr. Oscar Hernandez, who we acquired in Rule 5 as far as some of the lessons as far as preparation, understanding what he needs to do in order to become a major league catcher. But getting those two guys, I mean, and Stu was adamant about finding us a catcher, especially when we lost Tuffy. But with Tuffy coming back, it'll be healthy in spring. So then again, we're talking about competition, you know,
right,
for the at-bats and who fits best for you where. It's going to be a good offseason for us to really, again, continue to focus on what's going to be the best move for this organization to move us forward into 16, 17, and beyond. But having that I won't say a luxury, but having some really good guys behind the plate that you can choose from that are not starting at ground zero, it really helps us with our preparation for the upcoming winter.
I want to move over to the pitching side, because sure. He just pitched a few days ago, and what we were told by Chip, it's probably his last start. Zach Godley, did this guy completely come out of nowhere, or did you guys know that you might have had something there when you made the trade?
You know, our scouts did a tremendous job as far as chewing through the Cub players that we were presented with to kind of find a match for us to complete the deal. And our scouts did a really good job of knowing their organization, where he was. They had seen him. Our amateur stuff had him in college. I want to say he went to Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, yeah.
And there was something there, you know, with a big body. There was some power there up to 94, 95, but he hadn't had any consistency as far as repeating quality strikes. And so there was, you were watching some video, and we felt like there was something there that we could kind of tweak and get him in line a little bit. But the young man, his insights have been phenomenal, and the way he goes out and competes, he's definitely, I would say, exceeded our expectations and exceeded the reports that were written. But I definitely identified the right guy. And he was part of the mix of names that we were asking for in return in that deal. So he was definitely been a pleasant surprise for us.
And that's the great thing about baseball. I mean, there's surprises every year. He's one of many you've had. But, you know, each team goes through that, and you have to have that to have a winning organization.
I agree with you 100%. And the thing about, you know, you look at some of the clubs that come and they take off and have a great run down the stretch and they get in the playoffs. It's usually three guys who are having career years, you know, during those runs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with our group of young players, and you have a veteran at first base who's just steady Eddie and brings it to you every day, and Polly in center field. I mean, you have two quality pieces there. Now we get a couple of these kids to jump on and run. You look at Peralta, I mean, the year he's had. I mean, that's a pretty good year. And, you know, in seniority, pretty steady year of growth. You like to see, for me, see the stolen base numbers go up a little bit. I like for to see him walk a little bit more. But these are conversations you have with him as we go into the winter, and he'll come in next year with a different mindset and again, continue to attack this game of the way we want him to attack it, I hope. And, you know, those ABCs that Tony tends to talk about of hitting and playing the game fundamentally sound, you hope it starts to resonate with some of those guys in that dugout. I know that you watch from the booth and you see the conversations that are being had down there. Then post-game, we get a chance to go down and you find someone to pull out and say, hey, what were you talking about in the fifth inning? Just try to get a little insight of what they're sharing with each other. It's pretty good for us, and it's again, I think we're growing every day as we continue to move this thing forward.
You mentioned the outfielders. If you were going to write the report on Yasmani Tomas's rookie season, what would it read like?
Man, that's an interesting one for me, because again, I don't want to say I'm biased, but I am to a certain degree,
sure.
because you know there's tremendous upside there. I think the biggest thing you have to say for him is that here's a guy who's showing he's a major league outfielder, has a chance to be an everyday regular. I do believe the power is going to come as we go in. You'll see him in 16. He'll be more comfortable. He'll understand how he was being attacked. His first half was completely different than what you're seeing in the second half. Now, I'm not sure if that's just from the length of the season here in the States, but I think there are some things we can do, or he needs to do, to address his personal stamina, physical stamina, to be able to play 162-plus.
He needs to get in better shape.
That's one way to look at it, yeah.
Okay.
But again, the physical strength is there.
Sure.
And again, having the stamina to play 162. I think their season is 130 games in Cuba. And they don't play, you know, 7 days a week. It's like five on, two off, and, you know, just randomly scattered. So you want to make sure that, again, he understands what his offseason schedule should be, his work should be, to get him prepared to come in and fight for an opportunity to compete for whether it be a platoon or an everyday spot on this roster. But I do believe that there's tremendous upside still in that 24 turning 25 next year.
What's changed from your perspective with Yasmani second half here in terms of the at-bats, the conditioning, and the length of the season? There's no getting around that.
Yeah.
He's been through a lot the last 2 years.
Sure.
Didn't play for years, you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
But what you're seeing on the field in terms from your scouting eye, what do you see?
I think the approach has changed. I think the swing has actually gotten a little longer. You see his head coming up out of his swing. Where in the first half, this guy stayed on everything. His approach was geared towards the right side of the diamond, towards second base and first base. But his chest, his torso, it stayed over the plate better. Now you see his torso coming out of his swing, head flying up out of the swing, like he's really searching for power. So again, the ego kind of steps in. He knows that he has this power in there. You see in the batting practice, balls are flying all over, but it hasn't been able to translate in the game. Then we came out from the break. He hit a couple of balls. He hit a home run and one off the top of the fence. And it was like, oh boy, I hope that doesn't, you know, my mind was like, oh man, I hope that doesn't change where he's going with his approach. And sure enough, he kind of has, he's labored a little bit with trying to get back to who he is. And that's, you know, again, that right center field gap is where I think he's going to make his money. And then, you know, when they make mistakes and it up, he'll shoot them out of here.
That's so interesting to hear you say that because, you know, we watch the games and the fans watch the games and we say, oh, Yasmani Tomas hit a home run. That's great. And you go, uh-oh. I mean, that's a very interesting dynamic right there, depending on how you're looking at the game and the players.
Yeah, but again, understanding what you'd seen in that batting practice and coming out of the break, and, you know, he's got six or seven home runs, and he's like, man, this guy's hit 15 to 20 everywhere he's been. And so now that ego's going to kick in at some point, you would think, and you just want him to understand that this competition, you've never seen pitching like this in your life. We were going to come out here and challenge you and compete against you every day, where their guys are pitching around him. There's no there. You haven't seen anyone pitch around him here stateside, so understanding the competition and the ego, and again trying to manage. You were talking earlier about looking for those little pieces, and, you know, just the conversation that you have. Hey, let's stay grounded. Let's keep this thing simple. And you know, God, Tony preaches it over and over. And I'm paying more attention to the little things from these guys and what they do. So again, with him, stick with who you are for now. And as the, you know, you get more comfortable with what you're seeing and who you're seeing, Your natural swing will show up in time.
Yeah, you're looking for the evolution, and we're looking for the day-to-day here.
Correct.
It's interesting.
Yeah,
a lot of career highs. Talk about Ruby De La Rosa and his development this year.
Man, you know, watching, I've seen Ruby, good Lord, since he was 17 years old. So the maturity has been the biggest thing for me, and just how mature he has been in the conversations that he's had with Stu and with Hark along the way, and watching him just really take things one outing at a time and trying to learn. I think adding Castillo has really helped him out immensely with his game calling and staying the plan. But it's been fun to watch. I mean, the power has been consistent all year long. The slider has come and gone. The changeup has come and gone. But what I like about where he is that he continues to compete. He hasn't folded. You haven't seen his shoulders go down or hang his head after, you know, if he gets hit or, you know, it's a short outing. He comes back that next, you know, 5 days later, and he's ready to go and compete again. So just maturing and understanding that you know, this is tough. This is the first time he's ever won 10 games in his life as a professional. So this is just the beginning, and hopefully he's seeing it as, you know, this is just a starting, you know, starting point for him. Our conversations have been of such that he knows he still has a ton of work to do, but he has a chance to be, you know, a pretty good pitcher at the major league level.
And he keeps things interesting with one of the most unusual balks we've seen ever.
which he still can't explain, yeah. Which is great.
But, you know, that's Ruby, right?
Yeah, that is Ruby.
That's Ruby. I think this organization's got to be ecstatic with the offense and with the defense that you put on the field nightly with what you've got coming along, all the young kids. Talk about the pitching. Who was impressive to you on the minor league level? Obviously, we touched on Golly, but who are some of the other guys that kind of shot forward and kind of grabbed the organization's attention?
You know, Aaron Blair had a tremendous year for me. I mean, you watched him for me. I saw him in Mobile. The command improved in what we saw in spring training. His ability to compete has been consistent. He has not lost that at all. When we promoted him to Triple-A, I was really concerned because at times this stuff can get flat and elevated. But, I mean, this guy, he focused his tail off on getting the baseball down the strike zone. He competed every time out.
His numbers for the PCL are phenomenal.
They are really good, man. You love to see that because, I mean, you can almost take a full run off his ERA if you're looking to do that. But, I mean, this guy, for me, it's about the competition and understanding what parks he's pitching in and sticking to plan and pitching to his strength. He'd never left from pitching to his strength to get these hitters out. So for me, he was one of the guys that really jumped out. You know, the acquisition of Shashin during the summer, that was another one because he's so young and he still has so much upside. And this guy's going to be 27, so he's still into his prime. The power, you know, it's not like he's a big power guy. He'd never been a 94 to 96 kind of guy, but he pitches 88 to 93. And so watching him, you know, kind of, I would say, dominate the Triple-A hitters at that level. I mean, this guy was going 7-8 innings almost every time out and keeping him a run, 2 runs. I think his ERA finished up right around a 3. But, again, if you take him out of the PCL, it's a whole different ball game. But the ability to execute and make pitches, that was, for me, another positive. I go down a little further. I'm into the Kellers of the world, who's in the Midwest League. And this guy's like 19 years old. He's 90-95, heavy sink, hard power slider. Feel for his changeup. I think this guy's got a chance to be a 3 starter for us down the road. But we're going to have to, you know, again, be patient. But it's almost it's a push and pull at the same time, because you want to challenge him to see if we can accelerate him a little bit, because he does have a chance to be special. He's a big guy. He's like 6'4", 210 or 15 pounds, but really put together, and he's going to be, I think, just a physical guy that can handle some innings. We have a kid by the name of Banda that was in Visalia, left-hander with really good field.
Is that the Parra deal?
Yeah, got him from Milwaukee.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right. Really good
field. He started the game here, right?
That's exactly right. Yes. That's him. And, man, this kid just kept coming, and his confidence seemed to grow. For me, I wanted to push, but again, you know, it's that tough spot we're in, and Mike has done a tremendous job of balancing this thing out. Myself, in that role as a farm director, I'm pushing. I'm a pusher, because I want to, you know, challenge these guys, and it's okay for them to be great young. I think this guy, again, mentally, Mike had a better feel for where he was mentally, and that he wasn't ready for that double-A jump yet. But, again, seeing him, you know, the full year, he pitched his tail off. I think he led the team in wins and ERA. But it's a quality three-pitch mix there, and I think he's going to have tremendous upside. Wei-Jae Wang.
Kane County
started the year in spring training. He's touching 94, 95. I was like, man, this can't be the guy. You know, you see him an inning here, two innings there.
He's a little skinny guy, too.
Really lean. And so he goes out to the Midwest League, and I happen to get in there and see him pitch. And, I mean, this guy didn't miss a spot. It was – if you wanted to give him command grade, you know, being conservative, you could say it was a 60. If you wanted to go on a limb and say it was a 70 – I wouldn't, you know, and you can go back and look at the film. I mean, this boy did not miss the glove. It was unbelievable.
80 being the max. We keep hearing dominate
Up. Man, the changeup was plus. You know, he spun a little short, tight breaking ball. He flipped a get-me-over curveball.
I wish we could show people how your face is lighting up. I'm talking about this kid right now.
I came back and I was like, Tony, I said, I know it's going to sound a little crazy, but Mr. Wang may have the best command of all those guys down there. I mean, it was pretty impressive, you know. Johan Lopez, you know, he's almost like a lost year for him, kind of getting acclimated here. Flashes of stuff, you know, he's showing you 93 to 95, wipeout slider, you know, the weapons to compete. And, you know, I think he'll be fine. And I think the Arizona Fall League is going to be great for him to kind of get matched up against some really good talent. A little concerned because it's such an offensive league, but, hey, that's part of the maturation and growth of the player. There's some interesting bullpen arms, you know. We took guys in the draft that I can't wait to let the you know, the wraps off of, you know, whether it be Clark or whether it's Young, who are they're still pitching in the playoffs. And so I can't wait to see these guys in a full season setting, because I think they do push the envelope and they get here quick and they apply pressure to the Shipleys of the world, who's kind of sitting there in double-A. Had a nice year, you know, and he's still coming. And again, he's more of that 3-4, maybe a 5 starter for you at the big league level, but the command got better in the second half. So there's some interesting guys that are in that mix. And, goodness, I had some young kids on the offensive side that were coming that I liked. Again, I go back to Kane County. Bray, the center fielder, a really talented center fielder. Reminds me a little bit of Finley. It's the way he roams the outfield, switch hit, a little surprising pop in that bat, you know. The kid Leyva, he struggled a little bit in the Cal League, but I want to say he was the youngest player in the league, if not the youngest player in the league.
Came over with Robbie Ray.
He came over with Robbie Ray. And again, switch hit, played in the middle of the diamond. You know, I can't wait to kind of see what him and Swanson look like side by side, or you know, or you know, just to kind of get those guys caught up until they play together.
Well, this excites us because, you know, we always see the numbers and we hear a little bit here or there, but your excitement, I mean, there's a lot down on the farm.
Yes.
The farm is getting loaded again.
It really is. I mean, I haven't talked about the guys that we acquired. You know, you talk about Koch, this big right-hander we get from the Mets, and he's throwing up to 96, and you got Miller Diaz, who's in the Cal League. He comes out, he was 94, 97. I'm like, wait a minute, man. This is so the volume that you have, you know, that we came in this, you know, came into spring training with, and then the players that we've acquired since have just kind of kicked this up. I mean, I didn't talk about, we haven't gotten, you know, again, to Reheimer, who's a shortstop, who could have probably come up here and helped, and could have been a September call up with, and we wouldn't have missed a beat. Defensively, offensively, plays fast, hands work. He's a line drive gap guy. He's not going to hit balls over the fence, but he's going to be a steady player for you. Now, is he an everyday regular at second or short, or are you going to use him as a utility guy? So those are the conversations you'll have about him. Guerrero, I mean, when you guys get a chance to see him in the Arizona Fall League in a few months here, listen to the sound of the ball off of this young man's bat. It's a different sound, and if you get to see him throw his arm, if you want to call it an 8, you can. It's an 80. It's right there. I mean, nice. We have no one in the organization that throws like this young man can throw. So it's and he's 21 years old in double-A, and so you're excited about the future for the player and where he's going and how he's going to get there. So there's some interesting pieces here, and once we're able to kind of, again, I'm really excited and looking forward to the offseason as we have our meetings, our major league staff meetings, and we have our minor league meetings, and we have our pro meetings, and we can start, you know, you get to kind of, you know, look at the broad picture of where we're going, how we're going to get there. But one of the positives about this entire thing for me is Stu has never wavered, Tony has never wavered on trying to get better for the future. And we've gone and we've acquired some young quality arms to add into this mix as we continue to make these guys fight and compete for an opportunity to play at the major league level.
Well, you've been great with your time. I know you're on the phone and busy all the time, so we sure appreciate your taking the time out. To John Watson, Senior VP of Baseball Ops on D-Backs Podcast. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, guys.
Our thanks to DeJohn Watson. Boy, he's great, isn't he?
He's super.
I mean,
he's got a lot of information.
Such a smart, articulate guy, and he's so much fun to talk to about players. Just great insights. Speaking of insights, let's take a look around the league.
Take me out to the ball game.
Let's see what else is happening in the majors these days.
I don't believe what I just saw.
Time to go around the league.
All right, Gub, trade deadline. I don't think there's any question that the biggest move by any team in the major leagues at the deadline was the Mets' acquisition of Yoenis Cespedes, who this week people are starting to say should get MVP votes. He's been that much of a difference maker for the Mets.
Wasn't it Rick Sutcliffe who came over and joined the Cubs and won the Cy Young from Cleveland?
Yes.
You know, it can happen. What he has done with that ball club and how he's propelled them and what he has put to the middle of that lineup offensively has been phenomenal. I mean, the Mets right now, they better figure out a way to try and sign the guy because New York City will go crazy if they don't re-sign
Yeah, you wondered if they would have to go and get cargo from the Rockies or somebody, but Cespedes seems to have answered all their problems, and he's had so many big hits. That game the other night where they came from 7-1 down to win at Washington, he's up there, bases loaded, two outs against Drew Storen, and rifles one down the left field line for a three-run double.
Then the next night.
And then the next night, he homers off Storen. I mean, he's been unbelievable for them. And it's interesting about Cespedes. And, you know, that was sort of the test case when the Diamondbacks got Yasmani Tomas, and Chip Hale was very quick to point out that, because he was there in Oakland when Cespedes was there, he said, look, Cespedes was a man. He was a man. Yasmani Tomas is a kid, and I think we forget that with Yasmani. He's got some maturity ahead of him. He's still a young guy, but Cespedes is a grown-up man. And when they traded him from Oakland to get Lester and all those
guys, they haven't been the same.
Haven't been the same.
No. And the Oakland people were saying that when they were here.
They were rolling, and that trade seemed to change the entire dynamic of the Oakland A's clubhouse. Now, he didn't do much in Boston. Didn't really seem to do much in Detroit either.
His numbers are pretty good in Detroit, though, if you looked at
it. Right. No, I'm not saying he was bad, but he didn't have the impact that he's had with the Mets or that he seemed to have with the A's. It's interesting.
He's a New York type of guy.
Well, he is now, I tell you that. And they love him there. Met fans are going crazy.
Yeah.
What do you make of the Nationals, and there's no other word for it, collapse?
Yeah, and you can't really use injury. I mean, you can talk. They've had some key injuries. There's no doubt about that. But Max Scherzer's numbers this year, the amount of money they spent on him, he was sensational through the All-Star break. And then now here, I mean, it's just been it's not been a good season. The guy that they got back and I thought might get them back over the hump was Zimmerman, but he's hurt again, Ryan Zimmerman, their third baseman. But, you know, Jordan Zimmerman's not had a big year. He's a free agent to be. It's been a tough year. Matt Williams has been on the hot seat. I mean, he's getting it night in and night out, especially about that bullpen.
Yeah, it's not Matty's fault when Papelbon comes in and serves up the winner. But
And
if only there was someone on this show who, back when we did our preview prediction segments, had guaranteed that the Nationals wouldn't make or wouldn't win the World Series.
Nobody did that, did they,
Larry? Hello?
No, I don't think anyone did.
Really? You're really going to not even
really
give me
gonna,
the...
We're really going to go
You're
there.
Really not going to give me the acknowledgement. I called it. I called it in the spring.
I did notice how you wanted to say at first they were not going to make the playoffs.
I did want to say that, but I held back.
Yes, you did.
Which now I wish I had said they won't make the playoffs. But
now I'm saying it now. They're not going to make the playoffs.
The pieces there for me just never fit. And it's a great example of, you know, as we talk a lot on the show about what to do in the offseason, you got to make sure the pieces fit. And for me, when you look at the Nationals, they're injury prone. They got that guy, this guy. They sort of try to patch it here and there. It just never went together.
Well, and the other one you look at, and we talked about this. We looked at all the moves that were made in San Diego with the Padres, and we thought, is this going to really work?
No.
You look at the outfielders they had. We thought defensively, this might be one of the worst defensive outfielders in the history of baseball, with Upton and left, Myers in center, and Kemp in right. And, you know, they've had injuries. Kemp has gotten hot in the second half, but that hasn't meshed either. Washington and San Diego, to me, two of the biggest disappointments in all of baseball.
And now you keep reading how they want to trade James Shields.
Yeah.
This winter. I mean, I'll take him. They don't want him. Let's bring him here. He's not making that much money.
Oh, no.
No, he's not. Well, four for 72, I think it is. Right?
Yeah, but still.
Right. But, yeah. Don't teams go crazy with these big blow-ups and these big golf seasons? They change the whole team.
Yeah.
That's not
the
way to have sustained success is what the Diamondbacks are doing. And I just think it underscores the point. Slow, gradual, do it right. Do it the right way.
And
because if you don't, it'll blow up in your face like it has in Washington and in San Diego.
Yep.
Good lesson. What do you make of the American League? The Blue Jays, Cespedes was the big acquisition for me. Because
David Price has been a good one.
Because of the swing in the National League East, everybody handed the Nationals the World Series trophy, except for me, as we pointed out. Thanks for the support, by the way, earlier this season. But when you look at what Alex Anthopoulos has done in Toronto, boy, when you're a Blue Jay and you haven't won anything there in a long time, okay? You've been decent, but nobody's really paid attention or cared, frankly. Suddenly, into the clubhouse walks Troy Tulowitzki. Then a week or two later, in walks David Price. And suddenly, you're unbeatable. I mean, holy cow.
See, that ball club, they could hit without Tulowitzki. But they became even better by dealing Reyes to Colorado and picking up Tulowitzki. Where I think they really made a good move was picking up David Price. I think we know how it is in postseason pitching wins. They didn't have a lot of it.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got the knuckleballer Dickey. They've gotten Stroman back. Mark Burley, you know, he's kind of hit and miss. He'll give you a really good ball game. And he'll get battered around. But David Price now gives you credibility. He gives you that number one guy who can come out and win game one for you in a playoff series. And I think that was a big step for Toronto. With or without Tulowitzki, they were going to hit. I mean, the guys, the years they've had, Encarnacion, Bautista, you know, the other guys, throw them all in. But the acquisition of David Price, I thought, was huge for that ball club. And now they can kind of field around. They've also gotten Stroman back. He's pitching this weekend against New York.
That's good to see from
the injury. Yeah, I don't know how much he's going to pitch, but, you know, that's another big pickup for that ball club going ahead even in the next year.
Well, we will talk more about the pennant races on the next episode of D-backs Podcast. That's going to do it for episode 23. We will be back. Don't worry about another two-month hiatus. We'll be back hopefully on the next road trip next week or so, right?
I'll figure out what.
Fingers crossed,
maybe
yeah.
San Diego.
I think we're looking to San Diego, yeah.
So hopefully in another week or so we'll be back. But that's it for episode 23. My thanks to Leo Gilmartin and Greg Schulte. Fans, follow the D-backs podcast on the Twitter, the whole thing, at D-backs podcast. You'll get news about upcoming guest links to shows. We sent out a warning tweet the other day from the podcast account.
Yeah,
warning, Will Robinson. Warning, Will Robinson.
During the taping of this one, I sent one out.
We are back. So we're back in business here. D-backs podcast brought to you by Beverages by Hoffman, by Martin Paints, Martin Paints at Inches Paints, and Monsters by Strikes. For the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, the Earl of Grantham, the Governor Greg Schulte, and the Kingslayer, Leo Gilmartin. I'm Steve Berthume. Thanks for listening and downloading this episode 23, and we will talk to you again soon here on D-backs Podcast. So long, everybody.
This has been another edition of D-backs Podcast.
The game is over. The Diamondbacks have got to win here.
Thanks for listening.
It's over. Go home.
We'll see you soon at Chase Field for more D-backs Baseball.